Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Semi-Scribbled Podcast. I'm your host Akinyi and today we're going to be talking about The Havoc of Choice by Wanjiru Koinange. Now, I know it's been a while since we've communed here on the podcast. I've been taking care of the bills with my usual 9-to-5, but here I am back, and I'm so glad that I took some time to really concentrate on this book because this book is really, really good. I need to take an L because I underestimated this book. I bought it because I like to support BookBank. Wanjiru Koinange is one of the founders of BookBank, and they now have a publishing house known as Bank Books. So I think this is their first imprint under Bank Books. I love this book. I know I say that all the time. And I know I say that I say that all the time. But to be very honest, this book has been a gem for me because I really wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. And why I wasn't expecting to enjoy this book as much as I did is because of the subject matter of the book. Even the little blurb at the back that tells you what the book is about immediately lets you know that it's about all the things that we hate to talk about in Kenya. Number one, it's about corruption that goes on in the Kenyan government. It's about politics within the Kenyan space, and it's about elections. It wasn't speaking to me as a book that I would enjoy, but I really thoroughly enjoyed The Havoc of Choice. I loved the characters, and I loved how Wanjiru crafted the characters from the beginning to the end of the book. It really was congruent throughout. We followed Kavata, or Kavata, I'm not sure if I'm saying it properly, but Kavata is married to Ngugi Mwangi, and they have two children, Wanja and Amani. Kavata is the daughter of a prominent politician, Mr. Muli, or Mheshimiwa Muli. Muli is your quintessential Kenyan oligarch type of politician. Since shortly after independence, he has been in government. He has all his cronies in government. He definitely has the baggage that comes with that, meaning there's a lot of corruption that has been tied to him, which comes out very clearly in the book. Now, the interesting thing about this narrative is that we are looking at it not only from the perspective of Kenyans who are really frustrated with these types of politicians, but we're looking at it from the perspective of the family of the politician. And that's something that I must admit I don't really think about most of the time, other than saying that they are benefiting from the illicit gains of corruption. I never really think about the emotional and mental turmoil that the innocent parties within these families suffer or go through. So Kavata is a very good example of this. Or we follow Kavata and find out how she gets to know the true character of her father as a politician, how she's trying to carve herself as an independent person. And there are questions as to whether this is actually possible, whether you can divorce yourself from the privilege that is illicitly gained by your family. And Kavata, bless her heart, she tries her best to sort of remove herself from that ideology. But there's privilege, and privilege is a monster. It's an invisible monster that attaches to you by virtue of you being who you are, by virtue of your class, by virtue of the luck that the universe draws for you and the family that you find yourself in. Kavata first realizes that she wants to be an independent person, separate from her father, while she's in uni. And this is juxtaposed really well with her daughter Wanja, because in my view, Wanja sort of continues that line of trying to be independent. She's not trying to divorce the familial ties that she has with her mother or her father or her brother or her grandfather and her grandmother, but she's trying to be independent and find a source of income for herself and find a source of purpose for herself that is legitimate. The thread is there that starts with Kavata and continues through Wanja, in Wanja being just as brave as her mother is. So let me go back and say that when we first encounter Kavata and It's a Sunday. This book is really Kenyan. It's so Kenyan that I love it. Like, it's a Sunday. Most Kenyans go to church on Sunday. The Mwangis, which is Kavata, Ngugi, Amani, and Wanja, have gone to church. They are now after church speaking to Pastor Simon and his wife Grace. And Kavata is sort of, you can tell she's sort of hatching a plan to get them to come to her house for lunch. This is the first few pages of the book. So you're captured in trying to figure out what is Kavi, as they call her, what is Kavi trying to do? She succeeds in getting them to go home. Her husband, Gugi, is not very happy about this idea, but the pastor, Simon, and his wife, Grace, end up at the Mwangi's house, which is in Nyari. If you really want to get a feel of what Nairobi feels like, this book gives you a really good example. It really places the Mwangis squarely in the upper middle class. They have Skola, who's their house help. They have Thuo, who is the driver. And it's a Sunday. Thuo is present on the Sunday. Skola is not. But yes, you get to have a feel of they are really enjoying the trappings of being members of the political class. On top of that, we see how their actions affect the normal Mwananchi, who are Skola and Thuo, who work for them. Kavi has hatched a plan to get away from her husband, Mwangi, who is really under the finger or under the wing of her father, Muli, and he's trying to run to be MP of Machakos. From the get-go, I was hooked. And I really wasn't expecting to be as hooked as I was with the narrative in this book. I was really wondering how we would get around to the dicey things that generally as Kenyans we don't talk about. But Wanjiru does a really good job to bring these things out. We get to see the issues with class relations. We get to see patriarchy playing a role. We get to see tribalism coming up. And I know right now you're probably thinking that this is a no-brainer if we're talking about especially the 2007 post-election violence. But she also brings it out in the day-to-day activities that happened prior to the election going down and everything that happened afterwards. And there's a wonderful cast of characters in this book. I loved them all. And some of them I loved to hate them. Others I loved to just relate to them. Two characters that really stood out to me, which were outside the Mulis and the Mwangis. Actually, they're more than two. but there was Anne Agalo. Anne is Kavi's friend. And I love Anne because Anne is your quintessential independent woman who, from the university days when we're introduced to this character, Anne is really just living. She is living life for herself and she's doing all the wrong things and she's unapologetic about doing them. And when I say the wrong things, I mean the things that society would frown upon. It's really interesting to follow Anne as she moves from university to working to the relationships that she has, and until she comes back full circle to be in Kavi's life. And Anne plays a really good role. The theme of friendship really shines through there, that you can be friends with somebody who's your polar opposite, but they can really help you sort of firm up the decisions that you're making in your life. So I loved to see that for Anne and Kavi. I thought that Anne would be the only character that I really liked. I really enjoyed because she was outside the typical stereotype of what a Kenyan woman should be. But there was Jane. Jane, who was Honorable Muli's assistant. Yeah, you could say assistant. I guess personal assistant, maybe almost secretary, I don't know. Something close to that. And Jane comes into play when we are in the middle of election campaigning for Mwangi as they're preparing to really, you know, drum up support for him in Machakos. And Jane at first seems like a very, you know, put together character and she knows what she's doing. And I love to see that in terms of a woman in politics in Kenya who is helping these men get their act together in terms of what they want to achieve. Putting her politics aside, I was like, okay, Jane seems like a very interesting character. But then Jane goes ahead to show us that she is thinking of herself, and a job is a job. And this thing of a job is a job does come out quite a bit when we are sort of navigating the reasons as to why Muli has asked his son-in-law, Mwangi, to run for this election. But it also comes out when we look at Wanja, and I'll get to Wanja shortly. Jane, there's a line that Wanjiru writes about Jane, and I bust out laughing. Jane, when she realizes that things are going south in terms of this election in Machakos, because rigging has occurred and she can be linked to this rigging, and I don't want to give away too much information because I want you to read the book. Jane has sort of like a heart-to-heart talk with herself, and then she sort of hatches a plan of what she's going to do. She's like, she's out of there. She's going to leave. And she flashes back to what she has had to endure in these years before the election, after Muli retired. But look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put up that line on the podcast, semi, Instagram and Twitter page for you to see. But I burst out laughing because I was like, this, it's a stereotype, but I loved to see what Jane became, or how she's looking at her life and telling herself that she's out of here. So Jane was a character that I really enjoyed. Wanja is also a really great character. And as you can see, I'm so happy that most of the characters that were standing out to me were women in this book. Wanja as the daughter to Kavi and Mwangi, she's the firstborn daughter, and we all know about firstborn daughters in the African context. There's a lot of responsibilities that lay on our shoulders as firstborn daughters. But Wanja has another problem, which is that she seems to have disappeared in the scheme of things in terms of her family structure, because there's her little brother Amani, who, and there's a gap of, I think, about very many years between her and Amani, because she's in university and Amani, I think, is just starting primary school. Wanja does the unthinkable by joining forces with people who her family feels she should not join forces with. And she also gets away with it because they only find out much later about what she's doing. And the characters that Wanja meets as she's sort of forging her own identity in politics, but outside of her family politics, she meets Tom, who I was like, is Tom going to be a love interest? I was like, ooh, is this really going to pan out? I'll let you guys find out for yourself. And the day that she meets Tom, there's a character that also knocked me off my feet. I was out laughing. And he was a quintessential marketing executive from Ogilvy. And guys, I thoroughly enjoyed reading that scene. Wow. What I'm trying to say is that there was a lot of laughter. There's a lot of comedy that's really woven into the story really well. It surprises you and really draws you in. And I think Wanjiru does a good job to draw you into the book before she hits you with the stark reality of what happened in terms of the post-election violence. Boy, does she hit you. She hits you with the different perspectives. I loved how she went about it. It didn't feel like there was a particular affiliation with anyone. It just showed the carnage that happened across the country from different people's perspectives. Yes, all these people's perspectives are either members of the Mwangi family or they are very closely related to them. And seeing how these things happened was for me an education. I was in Kenya in December of 2007. I had just come in from school, so I was in between school, literally. And I came back, and I remember that there was tension in the air, but we mostly stayed at home, so I didn't really know what was going on out there. Yes, some of this might be fictional happenings in terms of what she narrates in the book, but I'm very sure that they're drawn from real life experiences of what went down. And a lot went down. When reading through those chapters, I was actually scared. There's something that's triggering for me, because right now we are in a pandemic and we are locked down at home, or we should be locked down at home. It's sort of a mini lockdown with a curfew. That element of not having the freedom to move around and having to think about when you're going to leave your house and having to think about stocking up your house with everything that you need so that you can hold in there was reminiscent to what was going on in 2007. And I felt triggered. I felt really scared reading those chapters. I was like, okay. I had to sort of ground myself from what was going on in that book. And I appreciate that because it captures the true reality of what went down. And for me, who's somebody who doesn't like to really get involved too much in terms of politics, this was an eye-opener for me to understand that literally the country was burning and the people that the country was burning down for were probably in Zanzibar enjoying themselves while everything was going down. It's not new. It's something that we know. It's something that Kenyans talk about casually in their social groupings. But the book really brings that out well, that the people who actually suffered are those who didn't really have a means to protect themselves. They didn't have places to run away to. And where they ran to, they encountered more violence. It really did capture well what happened in terms of 2007. I think Wanjiru does a good job to balance out the book by making sure that there are pockets of laughter that you encounter so that when you're hit with the reality of what happened, at the end of the day, you can have a zero-sum sort of gain. She leaves you where she found you, but she leaves you with sobering thoughts in terms of your politics, in terms of the characters that are in this book. Where would you find yourself? Why are you there? How can we make sure that what happened does not happen again? The ending, I had tears in my eyes, but I didn't feel as bad as I thought I would feel. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that there is hope at the end of the book. I do like the epilogue. I think it was done really well. It's like a style of an update in terms of what the characters are doing and where they're at. Naming of the chapters was another plus for me. For example, I think chapter 3 is the fall guy. That just sort of gives you a marker in terms of what will go down in the chapter. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And I went in with low expectations because I thought that the book would be rather depressing, but I really thoroughly enjoyed the book. There's a lot in there, and I am so glad that we have a Wanjiru Koinange who's writing and who can capture the essence of being Kenyan. She captures the essence of Nairobi really well, and I could see myself driving on some of the roads that she was talking about. I have never been to Fifi's. Fifi's is in this book. Fifi's is definitely part of one of the local universities here. I felt like I'd been to Fifi's because of the description in the book. So it's really that well done. So I would say do go ahead, grab The Havoc of Choice if you haven't already. I would really encourage also people who are not Kenyans to read the book to sort of better understand what happened in 2007 and to sort of understand the Kenyan psyche around politics and corruption so that you don't have to ask the Kenyans that you meet, what happened in 2007? Wanjiru Koinange tells you exactly what happened. Probably you can then have a conversation with your friend about it. That's all I have to say about The Havoc of Choice. I would definitely recommend that you go grab one. I got mine from Textbook Center, but you can get yours from your local bookstore. I am soon dropping another episode this week. Yes, I'm going to drop the Q&A episode where I asked everybody on social media to let me know what questions they'd like me to answer about this first season of Podcast Semi. So I will be dropping that in a day or two. I'd like to give a shout out to everybody who's reached out to ask me about the podcast. I want to say thank you so much for checking in with me and asking me about where this podcast is at and that you are eagerly awaiting the podcast. So here it is, and I hope you have enjoyed it. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us on Twitter at podcast_semi. That's podcast_semi on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to give us a little bit more than 140 characters, or you want to say a little bit more than commenting under our pictures, you can send us an email at semiscribbledpod@gmail.com. That's semiscribbledpod@gmail.com, and I would be so happy to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.